God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
Created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or make his arm, he spoke the signal of the light. Because we believe we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman, welcome to Disciples View. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, we are cautioned to use equal weights and measures. This is simply a way of saying, don't cheat your neighbor. If it's not a dozen donuts, don't say it's a dozen. Hence came the baker's dozen. It was 13, just to be fair. To be cautious. We're told to not lie. You shall not lie. Not deceive. Not clever lies. We're lying to ourselves as a nation. Many people. I know there's differing views on the 2020 election, even on this network. I respect those views. I know the election was rigged. I believe it was stolen. But here's the lie that a lot of people are telling, and here's the use of unequal weights and measures. Our system is designed to welcome fraud. It is designed in such a way that if you suspect fraud, you can't prove it because there's no baseline data. It's like this. You run a pizza restaurant, and you come in one day, and you call the police. And it's urgent. There's been a major theft. And the police come and they say, what's been stolen? Pizza sauce. Well, how much was stolen? A bunch. Well, how much? Well, I mean, look, there's a lot missing. Well, how much was there before? We don't know. Wait, so you don't know how much pizza sauce you had? No. Well, so then how much is gone? Well, a bunch. That's our election system. This is the safest, most secure election in history. Okay. Did we check voter ID? No. Well, then how do we know non-citizens didn't vote? Because. Did we verify signatures? Some. Not all of them? No. How do we know it's the actual people who voted? Well, I don't know. Did some of these ballots come from another state already filled out? Maybe. How then is this legal? I don't know. Raphael Warnock, who is, I guess we're supposed to call him reverend. He is technically a reverend. I don't think I see any fruits of the spirit in him, but we're supposed to call him a reverend. He's also, of course, in D.C., Congressman Reverend Warnock. He seems to believe that a hand count showing different outcome from Dominion voting machines could cause chaos. Well, it could. So why then are we allowing things like this to continue?
We now is Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock of Georgia. Senator, I'm so thrilled to be talking with you. There's so much I want to ask you about, but the eyes of the nation really are on Georgia right now, as you know, and I just gave a brief overview of what the state election board just did last week. There'll be more next week. You've said they are trying to set up a scenario in which they could refuse to certify an election whose results they don't like. That sounds a lot to me like people should be prepared out there for Trump and his team to try to overturn the will of the voters in Georgia again if he loses, like they did last time. Is that right? Is that what we should expect?
I'm very concerned, Jen. All of us should remember that famous phone call, a man from Florida calling into Georgia saying he needed 11,780 votes.
See, that's not what he said.
Mm-hmm. He didn't get it.
That's not what he said.
And apparently these members of the State Board of Elections, whom he called pit bulls, were out there doing his bidding and trying to create a scenario in which they can declare by fiat who the winner of Georgia is.
Declare by fiat. That man, I said, Congressman, Senator Warnock, declared by fiat. Kamala Harris got no votes. None. She is the nominee by fiat.
Jill Biden, who's running cabinet meetings, isn't a cabinet officer and was elected by no one. That's by fiat. From recollection, what President Trump said is, I want these votes looked at, not given to me, examined. So the concern that there's Dominion's counts, then there's the paper counts. Hey, look, let's be fair. Dominion got their day in court, and they won. Let's be fair. Let's be truthful. In their defense, they beat Fox News in court, solidly, in their defense. We don't have to like that, but they did. Let's be fair to them. We have to. They deserve honesty, even when Raphael Warnock won't deliver it. So let's be fair to them. So after gloating over his own electoral victories, Warnock implied that hand counting ballots to double check, that would be an act of voter suppression.
Listen, I've seen this up close. You know, I've won in Georgia two elections. My name's been on the ballot five times in less than 3 years. They saw the anatomy of my win during my first election, how we won in the runoff. And so going into the runoff this last time, I had to sue the state officials of Georgia just so that Georgia voters could vote that first weekend of the runoff. This is how voter suppression happens. Undermine votes a little bit here, a little bit there. The news that Georgia voters ought to be paying attention to is this. The fact that they are doing this means that they know we're winning. They know that the momentum is with Kamala Harris. And this effort to turn the democracy on its head so that rather than the voters picking their representatives, the folks who are running it to pick their voters, it won't stand. We're going to be vigilant in court and we're going to turn our people out.
It is. And I know you've won. You've dealt with these tactics before, so you're the perfect person to talk to about
this. Again, Kamala Harris received zero votes. She stole the nomination. And Raphael Warnock, there with Jen Psaki on MSNBC, are gleefully pretending to care about the democratic process. It's acting. That's it. It's just a drama. And the actual issue is, hey, can we do a hand count? We don't know if we think the Dominion numbers are accurate, so can we do a hand count? And who cares about the company? Any software is suspect in my mind. Here's why. Let's assume that the people at Dominion are the finest patriots in the world. If it can be coded, it can be hacked. Any computer code can be hacked. Just takes the right hacker. That's all it takes. So Raphael Warnock continued to discredit the hand counting of ballots. And when you listen to this, ask yourself, does this sound like a man who's honestly concerned about the Republic, or is he concerned about something else?
There are a couple of Republicans in the state of Georgia who have expressed concern about what could happen here. A lawyer for Brad Raffensperger, the state attorney general. Now, you know best if those are just words or if they'd actually take actions. If they wanted to prevent this from happening, what could they do?
Well, I think we need to see more action from the state officials here. And yes, I'm paying attention because, again, I've been through this history. But the fact that you have county officials, both Democrats and Republicans, saying that this is a mess, saying that we can't do what you're asking us to do, saying that this insisting on counting votes by hand is not only going to delay our ability to certify, but it certainly the data shows it doesn't increase accuracy, it decreases accuracy. Look, I'm old enough to remember Florida in 2000, and we all saw those, we all saw the mess that was, and we don't need that here again in Georgia.
Well, wait a minute. For the first time in recent American history, we were warned in advance, oh, we're not going to know who won. We're not going to know who won. They're telling us this again. It might be days before we knew who won. Wait a minute. What about the great machine counting? Independent of which company? What about that? The system is designed to encourage fraud. Because the systems in place, the data, the baseline data you would need to find out if it's fraud doesn't exist. Did we check voter ID? We don't do that. Did we verify signatures? Not really. Did we allow ballots to arrive and be counted even if they arrived after the election? Yeah, in some cases. Did we allow illegal immigrants to register to vote? Sure, but they didn't. How do you know? Did you check voter ID? You already asked me that. No. So Raphael Warnock says that the push for hand counts are simply meant to do this.
So we will continue to press the issue, but I want to be clear for the folks who are watching me this morning. The whole purpose of voter suppression really is to so demoralize the electorate or parts of the electorate that you don't even bother. And mm-hmm. for those who are watching and are wondering, well, what can I do about this? I'll tell you what you can do. You can show up. You can show up and say you're not going to squeeze my voice out of the democracy, that I have a right to cast my vote and for my vote to be counted. And showing up in massive numbers, that's the way you respond.
I'm so happy to hear you say that to people, because I think people hear this. And yes, it is a form of voter suppression, which is important to state again and again.
Voter suppression they want to prevent, say two people who are utterly, utterly overjoyed that the joyful, utterly joyful Kamala Harris is their nominee, having received not a single vote. People who are happy to see power seized are not people who care about the process of getting it. Funny thing. Remember when Jesus seized power? You remember that, right? You remember that when the Pharisees were saying, wait, under whose authority do you say these things? Under whose authority are you healing these men and women? Do you remember when Jesus seized power and he went in to the Pharisees' building, the temple, and just tossed them out, sat down on the throne? He didn't do that. He doesn't need to. He's beginning and end. Always has been, always will be. He was God then. Fully human, fully God. It was all those things. He could have seized earthly power. He didn't. Oh, every knee will bow. And every tongue will confess. But let's also remember this. People like Kamala Harris and Raphael Warnock, they're not that different. Remember the disciples arguing about who would be first in heaven? Remember that? Who will be first next to Jesus? Who will sit on the throne? They had that argument twice. One of them presaged an event where Jesus dropped to his knees, removed his outer garment, and washed their feet. In the kingdom of heaven, he who is first must be last. For the Son of Man came to serve, not be served. Remember that? So fascinating that politics is a mirror to the core human sin problems of coveting and seeking to become our own gods. Raphael Warnock is titled Reverend, and perhaps he believes all those things. Except I don't think so. Here's why. You can't believe that God is real, the God of the universe, you shall not lie, and then turn around and lie for a living. He doesn't care about voting processes. He doesn't care about democracy or the republic. He doesn't care about the sanctity of the vote. We know this because, like Jen Psaki, he's endorsed the theft of the Democratic nomination. And like Jen Psaki, he endorses and helps drive, as a senator, the stealing of our electoral college through mass illegal immigration. We know these things. But at least they're just politicians. When we come back, we'll talk about some ways that the church body continues to be under attack by lies. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Next segment, we'll get to the Tower of Babbling. And speaking of babbling, I want to go through some of the many, many ways that the word race is a magic word. Okay. When I talk about magic words, here's what I mean. They're words that end conversations, or they're words that make a debate impossible. Let's start with one that's super, super easy. Public schools. Wait, well, you can't be against the public schools. That word is magic because it brings back the idea of we're all in it together. There's the small towns. The teachers are all part of us. There was a time when that was true. There was a time when you went to a school board meeting, you could have robust, meaningful debate and discussion around issues. Now, we live in a world where in many school districts, if you question what they're doing, they'll have you removed. They'll shut down the meetings. That's it. We're ending the meeting. Because you are pointing out things we don't like. That's not a public school. That's a government school. That's the reason I use the phrase government school. Let's do another. Hey, you know what? My daughter thinks that she was supposed to be born with no leg below her knee on her left side. And you go to a doctor, you say, my daughter was born in the wrong body. She was born to be without a leg below her knee on her left leg. Please cut that limb off, that part of her limb. Please cut it off. Any sane doctor would say, you're nuts. Lady, you're insane. But you take the magic word transgender. My daughter was born in the wrong body. She's not supposed to have female parts. She's supposed to have male. Please inject her with wrong sex hormones and chop her up and give her fake male genitalia. Okay. Magic word. Race. When people in the West, particularly on the left, talk about race, they don't mean race. Race would be many factors. It would contain language. It would contain art. It would contain music and myth and heritage and stories and architecture and family structure and background and history and intermingling with other cultures and backgrounds and histories. That's what a race would be. They mean color. That's what they mean. They mean the least meaningful aspect of a human being. I mean, think of a LinkedIn profile. You ever go there and read, I have a level 300 melanin level. I don't even know if that's a thing, but you never read that because it's not indicative of anything that matters. And practitioners of this stuff, like Soon Chan Iraw, who's the Boyd Robert Munger Professor of Evangelism at Fuller Theological School, when they talk about race, they don't mean race. They mean color. And they use it in such a way that it's even worse than simply stating it as color. They use it in a way to communicate permanent victimhood and permanent oppressorhood because of melanin level.
Is it the concern that it's critical or that it's theory? I think the concern is that it talks about race. And that's our anxiety around this. Not that it's critical or that it's a theory, but that the topic is race. And for so many of us, the topic of race makes us so uncomfortable, so anxious, that we want to avoid it altogether, make it into a straw man that would easily defeat, when talking about race is complicated. Talking about race and conversations about race are difficult.
The gaze of the dominant culture defines the black community so that the rest of us have to play along. When the white male looks at the black male is either a pet or a threat. The gaze of the white dominant culture looks at the Asian male and says, you are a pet or a threat. We will trot you out there, our pet, and say, look, why can't you be like our pet, the model minority, on the gendered side as well? Bell Hooks says that when the white male gazes upon the black female, he categorizes the black female in two ways, the Jezebel or the mammy.
The white race. The. Like the science. So your melanin level, your color, determines how you view a black woman. Does anyone believe that? I don't think that's a believable charge. Melanin does not contribute to psychology. culture does. And there are cultures where there's racism built into it. They still exist. I've mentioned it's a couple hours from where I'm at. I mean, it's not even, to be fair, it's like 90 minutes from where I'm at in North Idaho. I know where to drive. I'm not going to because I don't want to get shot, but I know where to drive if I want to go up and find the remaining compounds. And there's some of racial separatists, mostly white. Although, actually, there are some black separatists in this area. You know what's funny? You know what? This is hilarious. There was sort of this strange fellowship between white separatists and black separatists. When the black separatists moved here, there were some white separatists who were saying, oh, this is good, because it will show it's not just white people who want separate races. And they, I don't think they sat down and ate together, but there was this understanding. And, you know, there's cultural areas around the country where this is true. Not now, not among black people. Except it is. There are some areas in black communities where there's a predominant hatred of Asian people. Cultural. I've talked to black people about this. Why is that? And black people have told me, well, there's a perception in a lot of black communities that Asians come, they set up these businesses, they make money off of our people, but they don't hire our people. And I've asked folks, black friends, well, what do you think of that? Well, what I've learned is that Asian people hire their families, that they live in their stores, they hire their families, they hate debt. They don't want debt that they want to own. They want to have cash flow properties. They don't want to have to work. They want to have passive income. They want to be investors. They're smart. So it's not that they don't like black people. It's that their theory is, no, hire within the family and build wealth that way while you work hard from bootstrap up. Culture. It's culture. Culture matters. There is a horrible thing that's gone on in the UK. And that is that rape offenses are skyrocketing. A rape offense in London now is reported every hour. Every hour in London, there's a rape reported. And the numbers have been going up, and they started to go up precipitously in 2020. What else happened? Well, there was mass illegal immigration forced down on the UK by the EU. At the same time as the EU was going to people who lived in Britain and saying, your crisps are too crisp. Did you know this happened? This was an actual rule from Brussels. Your crisps, in other words, your potato chips, are too crisp. And your tea is too hot. So the EU ruling is you can't have your crisps that crisp or your tea that hot. But you can be forced to accept mass illegal immigration from military-aged Muslim men who have come from a culture. It's not their melanin level. It's their faith, their myths, their art, their family structure, their heritage. That if a woman is dressed a certain way, well, she's asking for it. I didn't say this is all Muslim men, because it's not. But there is a culture that they would communicate as race. I'm being racist. I'm talking about an aspect of culture, not skin color. Do you remember the rape of Laura Logan? A CBS News reporter. Happened on camera. She'll talk about it. It was horrifying. She was over there doing her job. This has taken on a horrible aspect in London, and not just in London. In Germany and in Sweden, where some women are being told, hey, look, just wear the hijab. It's an anti-rape kit. Just wear the hijab. There's also the fact that culturally, Islam has taught that sexual conquest is okay. Impregnate the culture you're trying to steal. Infiltrate. Create Muslim families. So it is culture. when Soon Chong Ra, as we played, the Robert Boyd Munger Professor of Evangelism at Fuller Theological Seminary, pretends that skin color creates these conditions and pretends that it is white culture that's simply looking at the melanin level of others saying, oh, well, they're either pet or threat. No, I'm saying, wait, there are people who come from cultures where this sort of aggression against women is sponsored. So UK police, they're aware of all this. They were aware of the massive series of sex trafficking and rapes of young girls in Britain. And everybody in social work from the police down refused to report this because they were afraid of being called racist by people like that man. But they do have time to go out and arrest people like Adam Smith Connor. This guy was 50 to 75 meters away from an abortion facility. He stood by a tree out of line of sight of the abortion facility. He even had his back turned to the clinic to avoid any impression that he was staring into the windows. And he was praying. And this happened.
We just wanted to sort of come over and just say hello in the first instance, but sure. Also just inquire to your activities for today.
Well, I'm praying.
Just for your awareness, you are in an area which is governed by a public space protection order. I don't know if you're aware.
I am aware.
Of that public space protection order. They also call it a safe zone. There are signs located in the area just to make you aware of that and the area where certain activities are prohibited.
Sure. Yes.
In terms of that, can I ask what is the nature of your prayer today?
What is the nature of that? I'm praying for my son. Well, I'm praying for my son who's deceased.
I'm very sorry to hear.
Thank you.
Okay. So, again, I'm sorry for your loss, but ultimately you have to go along the guidelines of the public space protection order.
Right.
They say that we are in the belief, therefore, that you are in breach of what it says about prayer and also acts of disapproval around the activities that the
I'm just standing praying.
He's being removed for praying. Oh, incidentally, in London recently, they shut down the entire city so everybody could enjoy Pakistani Independence Day. Everybody. Do they understand? Let me say it this way. Do they know what they're doing? Last time Jesus said, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." Because they're persecuting Jesus Christ. Again. And the Lord is anxious to forgive. He's righteous and anxious to forgive. But sometime there's going to come a time that's going to be a permanent decision where the Lord Jesus will have said, okay, book of life closed. Wait, I want to get in that book. Gosh, I wish you would have made that decision earlier. You're not in the book of life. You're out. That's an eternal decision. The fight to divide us on race, to have us focus on color rather than culture, is a fight to have us at each other's throats, to commit the sin of hating our neighbors, at the same time as people in England who are running things are at war with Christ. Which brings us to John chapter 15, verses 18 through 25. If the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. This is the Lord Jesus speaking, of course. If you belonged to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I've chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would not be guilty of sin, but now they have no excuse for their sin. Whoever hates me hates my Father as well. If I had not done among them the works no one else did, they would not be guilty of sin. As it is, they have seen, and yet they have hated both me and my Father. But this is to fill what is written in their law. They hated me without reason. Do they know? Does Soon Ching Ra, the Robert Boyd Munger professor of evangelism at Fuller Theological Seminary, actually truly believe there's such a thing as the white race? That our sin problem is color dependent? One cannot read the Bible and come to that conclusion. Not as someone seeking to bring people into the kingdom of heaven by allowing God to work through them. Because Jesus Christ has said about the kingdom of heaven, people in it, in the body of Christ, there's neither Greek nor Jew, servant nor master, there's neither male nor female. The Lord views us equally, equally loved, equally able to have mercy, the free gift of redemption offered to all of us. And the Lord feeds through the common blessings, both the good and the people who are doing evil. Like people in England, threatening a man with arrest because he's standing behind a tree, turned away from an abortion facility, 50 to 75 yards away from it, praying for his deceased son. May God forgive that so-called officer. Welcome back with the Tower Babbling. I'm Todd Herman. This is A Disciple's View. To Disciples View, I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to the Tower Babbling here in a moment. If you heard the last segment, I forgot to tease the next segment. Talk Radio 101 should have some money deducted from my paycheck for that. We were talking about the fact that a man was threatened with arrest in England for once again praying outside of an abortion clinic. In this case, he was 50 to 75 yards away. He was standing behind a tree with his back turned to the clinic and still threatened by a police officer who demanded to know what he was praying about. And I pointed out that this is an attack against the Lord Jesus himself. It truly is. And I was wondering, do the British police know what they're doing? Do the officials who are forcing them to do this know what they're doing? If you find yourself in the position of going around questioning citizens about their prayers, understand something. You have departed the good side completely. And there are things worse than losing a job, such as persecuting the Lord Jesus because you were told to. Far worse than losing a job. It's not just England where this stuff is going on. I'm going to give you an example of the FBI visiting a man's house. His name is Jeremy Kaufman. You'll listen to why they were there, such as they were willing to tell him. But first, let's talk about the church. And let's talk about how the church can also abuse Jesus, can also persecute Jesus. This is from Sharon Wilson, a Louisiana appeals court judge, and she's speaking at the annual conference of the National Baptist Convention of America. She's talking here about President Donald Trump.
And I learned last night from Brother Reverend Jackson, it's going to take a black person to chop off the head of the racist in this country. So I'm just like, what more do you need from this man to know that he does not have our interest at heart?
That was 3 days before the second assassination attempt on President Trump. 3 days. Chop off the head of the snake of racism, or the head of the racist snake. And in context, I believe she was speaking about President Trump. This is at a Baptist annual conference of National Baptist Convention. That is to persecute Christ again. Jesus says we're to love our neighbor and our enemy. And it's clear that this appeals court judge considers President Trump an enemy. Now, I wonder if she's going to get visited by the FBI, because a guy named Jeremy Kaufman did. It was over a social media post, and I don't know what the post was, Does it matter? Yes. I know it wasn't a threat to the president or figurehead Biden or to a federal official. Here's how I know. Because of how the encounter went. These people pulled up to this man's house and the conversation ensued.
Hey, how can I help you?
Hey there. Is it Jeremy?
Yeah.
How are you?
Who are you?
I'm Agent O'Donnell with the FBI.
Can you give your full name, please?
I'm Agent O'Donnell with the FBI.
Is that sufficient to identify? Is there only one O'Donnell affiliated with the FBI?
In New Hampshire, yes.
Could you please state your full name, sir?
Could you please stop recording?
No. It's First Amendment right.
And he's right. It is a First Amendment right. It absolutely is.
Hey, how can I help you?
Hey there. Is it Jeremy?
Yeah.
How are you?
Who are you?
I'm Agent O'Donnell with the FBI.
Can you give your full name, please?
I'm Agent O'Donnell with the FBI.
Is that sufficient to identify? Is there only one O'Donnell affiliated with the FBI?
In New Hampshire, yes.
Could you please state your full name, sir?
Could you please stop recording?
No. It's First Amendment right.
Okay.
What's your name, sir?
Could you stop recording?
Absolutely not. You can show me your name and identification.
Now, you could say he's being rude to the officers. I disagree. It's never rude to firmly state your rights and to refuse to stop recording when you are not required to stop recording.
Oh, I'm going to go back inside my house.
Okay. I don't really want to broadcast my...
Oh, this is going out right after you guys walk away.
So that's why I'm not
going to... So you can show me your name or ID. You can walk away.
We just want to talk.
I'm not going to talk to people who claim to be federal agents unless they can show me identification.
Okay, well, you see our badges.
I need to see... Is your full name on that badge?
No.
I'd like to see something with your full name or I'm not going to talk to you.
For you not to broadcast it.
This will be going online as soon as you walk away.
Well, all I want to do is talk to you about a post that was made and if you happen to be the one that made the post.
I want to talk to you about you guys coming here. Say you make a salary of, I don't know what, low 100K? You guys making six figures? Factor in 50% expenses, overhead, maybe 100% expenses. Talking about burning a couple $100 an hour just here, let alone all the time you guys are spending to investigate something that you know is not against the law, right? Like,
so
you're familiar with... So then why would you come?
Because we just wanted to make sure that there weren't any...
No, you're coming because you're part of a regime that does this kind of thing when you know laws aren't being broken. And that's an embarrassment, man. Didn't you guys read the Constitution? Do you not believe in America? Like, how do you do your jobs and go home?
We appreciate it.
You're walking away.
Yeah, and the agents are walking away. They refuse to say their first and last name. Refuse to let them see an up-close image of their badges. They're there to harass him, and now they're walking to what is certainly a rental car, so he can't use a license plate identifier.
Because nothing we did is against the law, and you guys are that try to act like bullies. And I hope you go home and are embarrassed. You can't even say your name on camera because you know that what you're doing is embarrassing. You know Americans that believe in the Constitution think you're laughable. And you go home and you think about what you did today. Go home and think about it, you cowards.
And that's, well, tough language. But he's right. You're no longer a federal police officer when you are in the habit of business of going to people to harass them for saying things that aren't illegal. You have crossed a line. Please uncross it. Please prayerfully consider why you became a cop and rose to the level of FBI agents. Please remember or prayerfully think about what you're doing for the ability of people to actually trust the institution of the FBI. Please consider what you're doing to a nation already being ripped apart, neighbor against neighbor. Please consider that. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people, even the very corrupt people at the top of the FBI, on their tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower of Babbling. The Mockingbird Media has promoted, defended, and savagely lied for Kamala Harris since she seized power from Democrat voters. And they're good enough actors to feign surprise that their combined experience has worked to create a faux, fake, absolutely astroturfed sense of enthusiasm, such as it is, for Kamala Harris.
One of the other big headlines is that Harris is up by 9 points when we asked who is the change candidate. She's currently in the White House.
Yes, she's the current vice president.
That she's made this argument. Yeah. What's behind that, and what are your key takeaways?
Well, my key takeaways from this is that she's been able to change this from a race that was a referendum on Joe Biden to a race that is a referendum on Donald Trump. And what's remarkable to me beyond the favorable numbers, when you look at the questions of who do you think could serve as commander in chief, who do you think will be capable and effective, she has been able to not just move into the positive column there, but she's on the issue of competent and effective. She's moved 23 points from where Biden was. I mean, this was a big advantage for Trump going into the election when Biden was the nominee.
Let's remember that this is the same Mockingbird media who pretends that Kamala Harris was not the border czar. She was. Who pretends she didn't act as the last person in the room engineering the insane, idiotic method of withdrawal from Afghanistan. She was. They've pretended that she's separate from Joe Biden in every way, when in fact, on the night of the debate, they had copied and pasted Biden's policies onto her website. How is it that this is happening? Because you've spent $1 billion of your boss's money to lie for Kamala Harris. That's how it's happening. Next soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. Lauren Faulkner on Fox News was talking to a surrogate, Patrick Murphy from Pennsylvania, a Kamala Harris surrogate. And he made the decision to lie about the economy under President Trump versus figurehead Biden.
So wait a minute. What did you say inflation was when Biden took over?
I said inflation was up at high at 9%. It's now down to 3.2%.
No. When he took over from Trump, it was 1.4%.
Yeah, and there was $8 trillion
because Biden says it was at 9%, and I don't want you to get confused with his
debunked.
His like, you know, false talking points.
Right.
In other words, math is hard, particularly when you're trying to lie to someone like Harris Faulkner, who doesn't particularly cotton to being lied to. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling on PBS, they really had an interesting thing to say about a Hezbollah terrorist leader. You know, this is the same PBS who claims that President Trump is literally wanting to commit genocide against so-called trans people, literally wanting to disappear them, literally wanting to kill women, to force them into dangerous procedures because they can't have an abortion. They literally believe that, literally. And here they are talking about a Hezbollah chief, a terror leader. Listen.
He looked tired. We know that Hezbollah has been rattled as a result of this week's events, that they are feeling perhaps more insecure and more vulnerable than they have in quite some time. You know, Hezbollah has always had a reputation as being a very tightly controlled organization, very disciplined, very able to sort of keep its secrets.
I forgot to get in the soundbite that they also talked about his sense of humor. Oh, I'm sure it's a very funny thing to drop LGBT so-called TQ people from bridges and rooftops. Well, that is if you're part of a satanic group called Hezbollah. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
We often wrap up the show with sort of a personal observation from me, and today will be no different. We'll do that. One of the formative experiences that I had was the opportunity to work in government schools, and in a government school that was the school of last resort, I witnessed what is to this moment and probably will always be the most heartbreaking thing I've ever mentioned. And I hope that you'll join me in prayer for a young man named Stephen, who right now is probably in his mid-30s. He had been a little boy I met because he was throwing a violent fit in his classroom in elementary school. The teacher was hiding under the desk. Stephen was on top of a filing cabinet throwing staplers at her. And I went into the room. I saw him. He saw me. He put the staplers down. I said, buddy, are you done? Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to take you down. I'm going to help you down. I'm not going to harm you. I'm just going to help you down. I put my hands up. He allowed me to lift him down. I put his hands behind him very gently and said, hey, Stephen, you're having trouble controlling your body. I'm just going to control him now, but I am not going to hurt you, bud. I promise I'm not going to hurt you. Walked along and he knew my name and he said, Todd, I'm in trouble, aren't I? I said, yeah, bud, you're in trouble. He and I talked about what went on, what he could have done differently. And I knew about this boy. I knew that he had a mother who was a prostitute. I knew that sometimes he lived in her El Camino. I knew that sometimes she turned tricks in front of him. And I always feared that sometimes he was the target of those tricks. I knew this. I knew about the scars. That's why I constantly said, I'm not going to hurt you. He and I made an agreement with his teachers, all of them, that the next time he felt like that, all he had to say was, I need to go to Mr. Herman's room. That's it. No questions asked. And he did it. He kept that up. One day, CPS was about to come and finally get him out of that circumstance. None of us wanted it, but it had to happen. Someone in the office warned his mother, and she came to get him. She was walking out with him. We were trying to delay her. She knew that. He broke away from her, and he ran to me. I put my arms up, and I lifted him up to my chest, and he said his full name. My name is Stephen Blank Blank. This was a little boy who knew he was going down the drain. Except God. I pray that Father God has that boy in his hands. And yes, I have tried to find him. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak the words of Jesus. We follow his route to make disciples of all nations. Until God gives us all permission to speak again together, may his peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View. Do you love me? Do you love me?